This is 40 A&M N5, a weekly download of 40 A&M LLC. For more information and for our terms of use, visit 40a-m.com. New iPhones and iOS fixes. Mobile device security changes by Apple and Google. The Fed's open market committee meeting. And an announced gallery exhibit of hacked celebrity photos. What? That's not all, but it's a start. Welcome back to 40 A&M N5, the weekly download of 40 A&M LLC. It's Monday, September 29th, and I'm Chris Bohm. We've got new theme music and a long list of topics to discuss with you this week, so let's get right to it, shall we? First up, both Apple and Google announced some major device security changes within the past 2 weeks, with Apple declaring on September 17th that changes to its iOS operating system will make it impossible for the company to turn over data for most iPhones and iPads to police, even when authorities come calling with a search warrant. It used to be that when a user set up a passcode for their Apple device, that they had to choose whether or not to also encrypt their data. The difference now, that encryption will enable as a standard once the user selects a passcode, making it difficult for anyone who lacks the passcode to access the information the device contains, including photos, emails, or recordings. Apple will not have the capacity to bypass this now standard feature. It is important to note, though, that the changes occurring to the iOS 8 apply only to the vast amounts of user data typically stored on smartphones or tablet computers, but not what users choose to store or back up to the cloud. Apple will still have the ability and responsibility to turn over data stored elsewhere, such as in the cloud. As the new iOS 8 continues its deployment over the next several weeks, the number of iPhones and iPads that will be easily cracked will dwindle until those devices incapable of upgrading the operating system will operate the old way. The changes come only a few months after the Supreme Court's decision affirming that police will, in most circumstances, need a warrant to collect information stored on phones. There are some user downsides to the new practices, as you won't be able to contact Apple to retrieve your passcode if you forget it with iOS 8. Although once the phone is reset entirely, wiping the data set clean, backups can restore user profile. Google also announced a day later that its next mobile operating system, the Android L, will also encrypt user data by default. Like Apple, Google has offered encryption for some time, but users were largely either unaware of it or hadn't initialized it. As with Apple's moves, Google's encryption keys are not stored off the device, so they can't be shared by the firm with law enforcement. In what may have been one of the biggest boneheaded moves of the past few weeks, a Florida gallery had decided to exhibit the hacked naked photos of Jennifer Lawrence and Kate Upton, among others, staged by an artist known as Exvala. The reason? The promoters felt that such a display would represent a leading edge of expression exploring surveillance, privacy, and anonymity. Without a doubt, the hacked access to celebrity photos, at least some of which had resided in the iCloud accounts of the celebrities, proved to be the biggest tech-related story of the start of the school year here in the U.S. First reported on Tuesday, September 2nd, about 20 personalities had images of themselves leaked over the internet. The pictures were initially leaked through the image posting website 4chan, although copies apparently spread to other services including Reddit and Twitter, from which they were subsequently deleted by administrators. Celebrity blogger and website host Perez Hilton, who also posted copies of the photos, took them down and issued an apology after heavy criticism from readers and others typically approving of Hilton's reporting. Soon after, 4chan, known for its near imperviousness to criticism, bowed as well, removing the hacked photos. While the notion that you might not want to trust just anything to third-party storage, while there might be some merit to the notion that you might not want to trust just anything to third-party storage, the events of the past few weeks need not also cut out the legs from under the innovation potential of the cloud. To date, it seems very likely that there was no fault in Apple's security or its iCloud service that enabled the purloined access to private celebrity photos. Within 3 days of the breach, Apple itself released a statement indicating that it had found no evidence of a technical breach of its systems, and if so, it's a breath of fresh air for a much beleaguered reputation, rightly or wrongly, of consumer cloud services. But as the Washington Post's Haley Tsukuyama pointed out this past week, If the FBI or another is successful in identifying the individual or individuals responsible for the leaks, they'll likely face a fate similar to the Hollywood hacker, Christopher Cheney, who compromised the email accounts of Scarlett Johansson, Mila Kunis, and others in 2011. He was eventually charged under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act with computer hacking for gain, illegal wiretapping, and aggravated identity theft, and sentenced to 10 years in prison. The Post has also related statements from Lawrence's and Upton's attorneys indicating that they'll pursue charges against anyone who reposts the photos. Presumably this would include gallery displays as well. But beyond the issues of legality, who would want to advance this gallery display of purloined naked digital pictures as social commentary? It's hard to fathom. I'm a great fan of Jennifer Lawrence. Since her star turn in Winter's Bone, she has shown not only a mastery of her craft, but also an undeniable ability to make both risky and prescient professional choices. Among her work, we'll likely find far more redeeming pursuits than to champion her misfortune. And I'm happy to say that as of late this past week, the gallery show is off. It's been a few weeks of ups and downs for Apple. After weathering initial iCloud criticism in the wake of the celebrity picture hacking scandal, and helming a proud new product launch of iPhone 6 and preview of the Apple Watch, due out early next year, the new iOS operating system 8.0.1 ran into significant issues earlier this week. The new iOS was expected to fix a number of initial iOS 8 bugs, including problems with app connectivity to Apple's new HealthKit framework. But instead, the immediate impact of the new release was that many users experienced complete cutoff of cell service with the update and inability to use their no-touch ID feature. While Apple techs crashed on the problems on September 23rd, Apple support reportedly fielded numerous complaints with advice to customers to restore their iPhones using iTunes on a Mac or a PC, essentially reverting to the old iOS temporarily. By Thursday the 25th, Apple had prepared a revamped iOS update and issued, for it, a rare apology. Apple shares fell initially more than 3% on the news of the glitches, but recovered on Friday. In the midst of this iOS issue, some new iPhone 6 Plus customers had complained that the new handset, a bit larger and thinner than the last release, was having a tendency to bend easily. An Apple spokeswoman responded that with normal use, a bend in an iPhone is extremely rare, and through the company's first six days of its sale, only a total of 9 customers had contacted the company with issues of a bent iPhone 6 Plus. The company added that they choose high-quality materials and construct the handsets very carefully for strength and durability. According to the BBC, they understand that one of the checks that Apple has conducted before launching the iPhone 6 Plus was a sit test, designed to simulate the effects of a user sitting down on a hard surface with the iPhone in their back pocket thousands of times over several years. The company also apparently conducts a torsion test, which involves the clamping of an iPhone at both ends and applying a twisting force 8,000 times. Although difficulties with Apple launches are rare, the company is in good stead this summer with others having similar issues. Microsoft had to pull and later reissue several updates in the last few months, including an August security fix that crippled thousands of Windows 7 PCs, according to Computer World's Greg Kaiser. The notion of an Internet of Things, those smart and interconnected gadgets, sensors, and other tech ephemera, being made available to monitor and communicate with our homes, cars, work, environment, and physical activities, has been a frequent topic over the past year plus. And on September 16th, those who keep tabs on privacy matters in Europe had a new opinion to read from a key regulatory voice. I'm talking about the European Commission's Article 29 Working Party, which functions as the European Union's non-binding, though hugely influential, legal authority on all things privacy among the European Union member states. The Working Party had issued opinions before that touch upon aspects of privacy concerns regarding the Internet of Things, but the latest opinion represents a significant update and expansion on how stakeholders in the market and national regulators should think about issues, concerns, and compliance efforts. In the opinion, the Working Party chose to focus on 3 specific Internet of Things development lines, what it refers to as wearable computing, quantified self, and domotics, each of which are directly interfaced with the user and also not hypothetical or concepts, but presently in use so that they can be analyzed. Wearable computing is something that the Working Party believes will be adopted quickly, and they're probably right. With sensors, microphones, and possibly embedded cameras engaged in some devices, these can record and transfer data to the device manufacturer and potentially others in the chain of providing the primary services, and services that may be obviously, or not so obviously, ancillary to the device itself. In many ways, the second category, quantified self, gets taken up in the context of wearable computing, as these are designed to be regularly carried by individuals who want to record information about their own habits and lifestyles, calories burned or distances walked. These are merely the basics, with weight, pulse, and other indicators also sometimes thrown into the mix. Now, the Working Party divides the types of data collected by quantified self devices into raw data, for instance, movement of the abdomen, to aggregated data and extracted information, for instance, extracting information about breathing rhythm, and displayable data, for instance, positing that the potential stress of the data subject could be visual on a scale. All of this data, as it most often relates to health of the data subject, is treated by the Working Party as sensitive, given that the health-related information is one of the seven categories of sensitive information identified under the European Directive. Domotics are devices that the Working Party identifies as those most often placed in the home or office, for instance, including sensors to detect temperature, connected light bulbs, smoke alarms, and garage door openers, these types of things. Analysis of usage patterns of these devices is likely to reveal much about the inhabitant's lifestyle, their choices, or simply their presence at the house. So the possible privacy challenges are many, according to the Working Party. But among these different types of devices interacting with the user and the Internet of Things, the Working Party foresees that the interaction between objects, objects and individual devices, individuals and other objects, and so forth and so on, hardly presents an environment that is easily tracked and or managed with the classical tools most often used to protect data subjects, their interests, and rights. In particular, the Working Party is concerned with data control, uses of data that are subsequent to a subject's original consent, and how developments and innovations to originally subscribed services and products will impact the quality of that consent in an environment that may trend toward what it terms as function creep. The presence of different levels of processing, whose technical design and implementation are provided by different companies or teams, can result in, its words, weak points and data access vulnerabilities. And in such a complex mesh of stakeholders, the Working Party recommends precise allocation of legal responsibilities based upon respective stakeholder roles with regard to the processing of a user's personal data. The Article 29 Working Party's opinion, this is Opinion 8/2014, can be found at ec.europa.eu/justice/data-protection/article-29. 2 weeks ago, we talked to you about the possibility that the Swedish makers of Minecraft, Mojang, might be bought by Microsoft. Well, it's true. Swedish software studio Mojang and its founder, Marcus Persson, have inked a deal reportedly worth $2.5 billion. It was announced on September 15th by Microsoft's Xbox chief, Phil Spencer, and the acquisition will include the departure of Mojang's top three executives. Mojang is the creator and operator of Minecraft, in which players use blocks to build shelters, cities, devices, weapons, and simulated environments to defend their character against the game's zombies and other monsters. According to Bloomberg, 54 million copies of the game had been sold through June of this year, which, for a game only released in 2011, makes it the third best-selling game of all time. Minecraft has since been released for the Xbox One and PlayStation 4. Minecraft gamers regularly tune in to sites like Twitch and YouTube channels to watch other gamers develop strategies and other novel uses of the game. And there was some talk last week that a deal with Microsoft might make it more difficult from a copyright perspective for some gamers to continue making a living in this way. But on the firm's website, Mr. Persson, known as Notch, tried to assure the loyal following by saying, "Please remember that the future of Minecraft and you, the community, are extremely important to everyone involved. And if you take one thing away from our post, let it be that." Mojang added that there are only a handful of potential buyers with the resources to grow Minecraft on a scale that it deserves, and that Notch doesn't want the responsibility of owning a company of such global significance. Microsoft is expected to close the deal by the end of 2014, and the Mojang team is expected to join its game studio, which is responsible for such titles as Halo, Forza, and Fable. In the same week as the Mojang deal was announced, Larry Ellison, CEO and co-founder of Oracle, announced his stepping down from the chief executive chair after 37 years. Mark Hurd and Safra Katz, both of whom have worked with Mr. Ellison for several years, have been named as successors and co-chief executives. Ms. Katz will run the manufacturing, legal, and finance operations at Oracle, while Mr. Hurd, who had formerly been at Hewlett-Packard, will be in charge of the sales, services, and business units. Mr. Ellison, though, is hardly stepping aside altogether, as the world's fifth wealthiest man, Forbes put his fortune at about $51 billion, will become chairman and chief technology officer at Oracle, with software and hardware engineering teams reporting directly to him. With many industry customers shifting to cloud computing in order to avoid paying software licensing fees, the moves at Oracle to address upheavals in the business software market were not entirely unexpected, though the timing proved a bit of a surprise. On September 16th and 17th, the Federal Reserve Board held its September Federal Open Market Committee meeting, one of eight that it holds throughout the year. The big news, although not particularly news really, is that the Fed announced their intention to keep interest rates low for what it calls a considerable period of time. It's expected at some point that the Fed will act to raise interest rates in order to stave off possible inflation. Once the Fed ends its quantitative easing program, the program of bond buying stimulus begun in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis, the watch will be particularly out for signs of new inflation. According to Forbes' commentary on last week's meeting, their read is that a general consensus that the Fed may accelerate its timetable for raising interest rates is upon us, in part because the FOMC release last week had the Fed also raising their forecast level significantly. But a considerable period of time, as the Fed put it, could mean a lot of things. And according to the OECD last week, a slow recovery in the Eurozone is largely holding back the global economy. In its report, the OECD downgraded its future growth forecast for most of the world's largest economies, giving the Eurozone a likely growth figure of 0.8% for 2014, compared to a forecast of 1.2% in May. Its estimate for the U.S. economic expansion did not take too much of a hit, cut from 2.6% to 2.1%, but only India was expected to grow quicker, with its forecast upgraded from 4.9% to 5.7% on the year. What does all this mean? Stay tuned. On Thursday of this past week, President Obama announced that Attorney General Eric Holder will be stepping down. It wasn't an unexpected announcement. The Attorney General had previously said that he planned to leave office by the close of 2014, but the timing came as a bit of a surprise. After 6 years in the position, Mr. Holder has said that he will stay on the job at Justice until a replacement can be confirmed. Although some in Congress, particularly conservative Republicans, have long attacked Mr. Holder's integrity, particularly over the department's conduct of the gun trafficking case known as Fast and Furious, as the nation's first African-American attorney general, he became known as especially forceful with efforts to protect voter rights and end racial discrimination in the justice system. He has also sustained some criticism from activists and civil liberties advocates within his own party, given support for surveillance measures and the prosecution of journalists during leak investigations. Some of the potential candidates mentioned this past week to replace Mr. Holder include Governor Deval Patrick of Massachusetts, Preet Bharara, the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, Donald Verrilli, presently the Solicitor General, and Katherine Rumler, former White House counsel. It remains uncertain whether the White House intends to announce a candidate and seek confirmation by the close of the year during the post-election congressional lame duck session. There have been views on this the past week on the merits and demerits of such a strategy, but regardless, if confirmed by the Senate, a candidate would inherit a bevy of civil rights investigations throughout the country, including the shooting in August in Ferguson, Missouri. And that will be all for us again this week. You have been listening to 40 AM and 5. For more information and for our terms of use, visit 408-M. www.mobiledeviceandsecurity.com. All stories for this week's download were reported by at least two online or print news sources or taken directly from relevant releases, with the exception of specific reporting highlighted from Computer World, the European Commission's Article 29 Working Party, Bloomberg, Forbes, the BBC, the OECD, and the Washington Post. Thank you for listening. 40AM and 5 will be back with you again on Monday, October 6th. Until then, of course, make it a good week, or few weeks, and bye for now.